All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off. They're taking your money. They're using it to hire people with guns to come after you, do all kinds of really crazy things, like steal more money. Imagine that. They steal your money and use your money to steal more money. It's amazing. Why didn't I think of that? Of course, broadcasting live from on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for president of the United States, currently candidate for governor of Texas. And today I've got Robert Prosal with me, who has a really amazing story. Literally, the DEA tells him that their laws are bullshit. They can't enforce them. They're unconstitutional. We're going to hear all about that. It's really amazing. And of course, after that, he's been harassed by all kinds of local police departments and everything over cannabis. So I'm really excited to hear this story. But of course, before we get started, if you're watching the live streams, please remember to like and share, invite your friends, start a watch party, because this is really going to get interesting today. And of course, head over to taxationstuff.info. And we've been running this contest for a while. I don't know if you heard about it yet, but this thing right here to the side of me that you can see on the screen that looks, some people have told me, like an AR-15. It's not. It's the Magic Opener 3000. It's really an amazing tool that will open anything. And if you head over to taxationstheft.info or click the link in the description for this video, you can sign up for free to win. It's amazing. We're giving this thing away. It's crazy. And of course, make sure you subscribe on YouTube and Facebook and everywhere else and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now on to the show. Robert, welcome. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great, Dan. I have to thank you for having me on the show today. And I do have to agree, the government is robbing you blind in more ways than you can imagine.
Yeah, it really is disgusting. And like I have kind of a light sense of humor about it here, but it's just from like seeing it happen for so long. It's just kind of like, you know, okay, well, if I could sit here and be pissed off about it, but that's not going to get me anywhere. It really is. It's disturbing. It's like, this is an organization that since I was a kid, I was told, you know, these are the good guys. These are the people who keep you safe at night. And no, they're the worst people. They're ripping us off. They're robbing us blind. It's absolutely insane. And you've got a story about this.
I do.
Yeah. So I don't know where to start. I really want to get into this part about the DEA, but let's go further back. Where did this all start? What's your involvement with this story? How did you even get in front of the DEA? But like, what's your deal?
Okay. Well, all the way back to 1999, I got pulled over on the way home from a camping outing with one of my friends. And when we got pulled over, he told the officer that we had been smoking marijuana and that I had handed him the joint to smoke. So therefore they decided to prosecute me for delivery of less than a quarter of an ounce because I passed him the joint. When I went to court for this event, I was presenting the Constitution for my defense, and I was repeatedly stated that I would be held in contempt of court if I continued to refer to the Bill of Rights or to the Constitution. After that, it really kind of lit a fire under me and made me dig further into the law. And also in 1999, I was struck by lightning, and I was actually had just walked inside from pouring rain outside and into my buddy's room. I was standing right in front of the window, and a bolt of lightning came through, hit the bar in the middle of the window, and I was standing about a foot from it.
Wow.
And part of the lightning jumped to the back of my head. Everything kind of locked up for about 20, 30 seconds. And then everything had a light, like white and blue glow to it. And like I said, I couldn't move for about 20 or 30 seconds. Then I sat down, and it took me about an hour or so to kind of regain myself. And then after that, my research, everything just clicked together. A lot of the missing pieces started falling in place. So then that drove me to go to paralegal school and take my research there, which in one of my classes, I had a prosecuting attorney as my teacher. And one of our tasks was to research laws and show how it's either constitutionally legal or illegal. And I went ahead and used my research on the Controlled Substance Act. After I had no one that could disprove any of the information, I took that to the DEA on marijuana.com in 2005. On there, we had a conversation about the legality of the drug laws, the Controlled Substance Act, as well as the traffic laws. And both of those go around the same central basis. And I showed how that is unconstitutional through the Fourth and Fifth Amendment, as well as the Sixth. And I've got some stuff on my screen here. Let me go ahead and pull this up. Try to flip my camera around.
So this is, I mean, yeah, this is, I don't know what to say about this. This is ridiculous.
Yes.
But, okay.
Okay. Basically, the Sixth Amendment requires you be informed of the nature and the cause of the accusations. And through using a scientific process of law in the Fifth Amendment, we come down here to where the hypothesis is, which is what is stated in the legislative bill. If A plus B, then C. A would be the nature of the accusation or all essential characteristics. So that would be the act of traffic, which would be Texas or US code. And then you'd fill that in. While not being an exemption, and you could fill in the code for that as well, while doing the action of speeding, not having registration, running through a red light, and you could list that code there. At that point, they're also saying that you would lose control of your vehicle because you and then would cause personal or property damage because of what you did. Either you were going too fast, you ran through a stoplight, you didn't have your inspection. The cause of the accusation would be the actual actions taken by the defense. Either speeding, not having an inspection, running a red light. And then the final accusation would be the outcome or result, which would be the act of traffic is not being an exemption while doing speeding or not having an inspection. And that would cause personal or property damage. And then the experiment, which you can actually more or less, I'm going to be using in court with the Controlled Substance Act, would be the hypothesis, which is what we just went through here, because that is what is essentially the nature, all essential elements of the act of traffic. And then you would come down here to where the outcome or the results are, and you can go into the double jeopardy part. Is the accusation of traffic the same as the accusation of exemptions? No, then there's the double jeopardy occurs, or self-incrimination would have to occur. The accusation of exemptions not, is it the same as the accusation of not having an inspection? No, then double jeopardy would occur again, or you would have to provide self-incriminating evidence to prove otherwise. And you can apply that to each part of it. So you would be having multiple jeopardies just because of the way that the law is written. Like the act of murder would be killing someone and you cause their death. So that would be pretty cut straightforward.
So now this is talking about specifically we're talking about traffic issues here, right? We're not talking about trafficking drugs at this point. We're just talking about traffic.
This is just a standard traffic ticket. Just a traffic stop, them having the ability to stop you for driving down the road. Essentially, the Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment, the right to require a warrant for search and seizure, and the right to not self-incriminate yourself, basically make the government blind, deaf, and dumb.
Right.
Do you know who Lynn Sanders Spoonage is? Spooner?
Yeah, Lysander Spooner.
Yeah. He has many of the same theories that I'm going to be putting into effect. I'm going to be using many of his theories as well as ones that I came up with that are very similar to it to prove my points in case in court.
So which case are you talking about right now that you're fighting?
Well, I have currently four cannabis charges. Two of them are exactly the same charge. All of them are from the same offense when I was pulled over in Rockwall illegally.
And so when you had this conversation with the DEA, that was related to the same incidents? Or is this?
Well, this is information that I presented to the DEA that we discussed.
Okay. And how did that conversation go?
Well, by the end of the conversation, I ended up going out and purchasing a Hayabusa motorcycle, a 2006 model. At that time, it was the world's fastest production motorcycle. About a month or so later, I got pulled over for supposedly racing and going over 185 miles an hour. We stopped on the side of the road. They got my information. They then ran my information and then walked back to me and said, "Hey, here you go. It's your lucky day. Please slow down." And then turned around and walked off.
Now, why did that happen?
They did it. That happened in 2005.
But why? Why did they not give you a ticket for going?
That was when I was having the conversations with the DEA, and they felt that I would be more of a hassle than it would be worth, because then I could apply my defense for traffic laws to the same way to the drug laws.
But how would they know all that from looking up your license? Like when they put their license into their computer, they don't generally get into. I mean, I guess unless you have a federal warrant or something, but that's all they would see. Like what could they have seen that would have? And I mean, it's unusual.
Yeah.
Like I have no idea why they would do that. But
yeah, to my understanding, I had a do not detain placed on me, and it lasted about 2 years. Because over the next 2 years, any time that I would get stopped, they would just immediately come back, hand me my license, my insurance, and turn around and walk off.
What is a do not, like, how do you get a do not detain? Like,
I don't know. Everybody I talk to seems to want one of those. But it's basically the understanding that I have of the Fifth Amendment and the Fourth Amendment. Because when they stop you going down the road, do they have the warrant that is required by the Fourth Amendment to stop you? I would say 99% of the time they don't.
Right.
They are searching your effects with an E, not A, and that's actually included in the Fourth Amendment. Your effects cannot be searched and seized without a warrant. So they can't use what you're doing to the vehicle, how fast you're going, if you're using turn signals to change lanes. They cannot use that against you until there is public danger. And then once there's public danger, the people have the ability to file a charge. And then at that point, then the government can get involved to help support the people.
Right.
The government is currently being run for the government, by the government, and of the government. What I mean by that is, for the government is, the government is bringing charges against the people. They're taking over the role of the people within the aspect of government. Secondly, they're also using militants, which would be by the government, to enforce the laws. If you look up the definition of a militant, you'll see it's someone that carries rank and a weapon. Do the police, do the CIA, do the FBI carry rank and a weapon? They all do. So that would classify them as militants. And then the last one would be by, or of the government, or for the government, would be the use of mandatory minimum sentences and the use of plea deals so that they can control every aspect of the charge. It's no longer for the people, by the people, and of the people.
Right. Man, this is interesting. And I'm like, as you're talking, I'm looking for the do not detain list to see what information. And there's, you know, one of the first things that comes up, not with a whole lot of backstory to it. They mentioned common law on here. And this sounds like a lot of the Patriot mythology stuff, but it says, you know, do not detain list, what it is, that sort of thing. And this is interesting because this is actually kind of what got me on, you know, this road to freedom kind of deal, where, you know, I saw this stuff and I was like, how much of this stuff is actually true? And because a lot of it was just like crazy, but then I went on to experiment on my own and found out that there's a scary amount of this that is absolutely true. I'm trying, and this is how they operate too. Like something like if there is a do not detain list, that's not something that they would codify. That's, you know, that people would say, oh, well, show me in the law where they have a do not detain list. And it's like, no, that's not something that they do, because if they do that, then it makes it obvious that their whole system of smoke and mirrors is a scam. But what they would do is they would have a system in place that says, you know, something to the effect of, this guy knows his rights, don't mess with him. But at the same time, that also opens a whole can of worms to, okay, you've got, I think there's over 1.2 million police and sheriff's departments, officers and deputies and everything in the entire country. That's 1.2 million people who would know about this. And, you know, as they say, the more people who know, the harder it is to keep a secret. So I'm really curious about this, and I want to find out some more information about whether or not this really, like, exists in such an overt way, and what kind of information we can get on that. But, you know, to your point, because this is how I've seen the traffic laws, and this is how I've interacted with the police, is that I don't have a driver's license, because I came to the understanding that when you get the driver's license, you now have a contract with the government, and that contract is now enforceable. So, for example, and some, they just like, they're very overt about it. In California, when you get your license, at the bottom, when you have to sign your name, it says, by signing here, you agree that if you're asked to give a blood, breath, or urine sample by a police officer, you will do it. You just gave up your Fourth Amendment rights, your Fifth Amendment rights. You just did that because you have a contract with them.
What I would say is that contract would be void based upon the Tenth Amendment, because it states that the rights that are given to the people are the rights that are reserved by the people are theirs. So you cannot sign a contract to give away something that is in that, according to the Constitution, that contract would be void because it is contrary to the Constitution itself. Well, particularly in Texas, Section 29, it says that exactly. Let me pull it up real quick.
All right. Because, I mean, you absolutely can surrender a right. So, for example, if a police officer says, can I search your car? And you say, okay. You just gave them permission. Even though you have a right to say no, you gave them permission. And that's really what this is about. And when you have a driver, when you have a license plate on the back of your car, that's basically a red flag that says, this is a vehicle. This is not just a car. This is a vehicle that somebody has a contract under, and therefore you have the authority to stop it. And that gives them, that's how they have the authority to stop you now. Now, of course, if they see a car without a license plate, they're going to stop that too. And if you don't know what to say, they're going to go through the same process. They're going to give you a ticket. But if you assert the fact that you don't have that contract, that's where you can get them to back off and say, okay, well, I guess I can't mess with this guy.
Well, I also disagree. Without a warrant to search your papers to request that contract, they would be violating the Fourth Amendment for the search and seizure. And but here's the 29th Amendment. I can zoom in a little bit better there. To guard against transgression of the high power herein delegated, we declare that everything in the Bill of Rights is expected out of the general powers of government and shall forever remain inviolate, or and any laws contrary thereto or to the following provisions shall be void. So that means anything that
pass a law that violates those rights.
Correct, or requires you to give them up, because that in itself.
Right. But that's contrary there too. But that's the trick. You're not required to get a driver's license. They trick you into getting it when it's completely voluntary. So now you have voluntarily surrendered those rights. And now they say, oh, well, you're part of this contract. You're part of this class of people, and these rules are enforceable because you signed the contract. If you're so smart and you knew that you didn't have to sign that contract and we couldn't take your rights away, then why did you sign the contract? That's basically their argument. Which is, I mean, it's fucked up. Believe me, we're on the same side there.
All right. Since you're bringing up contracts, mm-hmm. Do you think that the oath of office that the politicians and militants take would be considered a contract to the people? So if they violate their contract with the people, then they give up any exclusions or special treatments that might be included with it.
Absolutely.
I agree with you there. So anything that they would present to try to overthrow something or present information that is contrary to one of the requirements in the Bill of Rights, whether it is a contract that you were pressured into, which they use terroristic tactics to do, either
absolutely
threatening you with harsher punishments or with other threats.
It's fraud.
So at that point, you would actually also be able to bring them up on treason, because they're trying to overthrow the Constitution as it is written, or the state as it is written within the Constitution. Because at that point, their attempt to overthrow the Constitution itself is an attempt to overthrow the state.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very valid argument. I mean, like, and what sucks is a lot of people just can't see that. But I mean, you know, imagine right now we've got President Trump. Imagine President Trump is sitting there and he's the president and he says, yeah, you know what? We're going to get rid of this Constitution and we're going to replace it with something else. But he's still president and everybody in Congress is still there and we still go on to have our elections, but now our Constitution is gone. Didn't they just overthrow the government and replace it with something else? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But
so by passing laws essentially through Congress and through the House, they're doing that exact same thing if they're contrary to the Bill of Rights. If they say, well, if you do this, then you're giving up your right to do this, which they were never given the power to do, because it was always reserved by the people. It started with the people. It was never given to the government for them to take.
Right. So what's... When you had, how did you have this? Did you sit face to face with the DEA, or was this like over a message board or a phone call, or how did you talk to the DEA?
It was on a message board. They would do a post and then I would respond to it and vice versa. There was about, I want to say, at least 10 to 12 agents that would chime in throughout the conversation.
Okay. And how did that go? You gave them this same kind of argument, right?
Correct. I gave them the same information I gave you for the traffic, as well as I gave them the information for the Controlled Substance Act, in which I asked them to answer simple yes-no questions, which they were unable to do, without agreeing that it was in violation of the Constitution.
Right. Is this still up? Is it still public?
Actually, the website's been taken down, and I want to say within a month after me finishing the conversation with them, they went in there and edited it so badly. Oh, it was ridiculous.
Man. Yeah, it's, and this always amazes me how, I mean, the government, as much as they try to intimidate us, it's okay, you can answer the question. I mean, if you're not doing anything wrong, you know, oh yeah, if you were smoking a little joint, yeah, don't worry, we don't care about that. And then they arrest you for it anyway. But they try to make it such a big deal about, yeah, just come on, just tell us, it'll be fine. But when it comes to them talking, they know how not to answer questions. They know not to answer questions. I mean, when we see like the police, the police have shot somebody. What do? They shut the fuck up. They don't say anything for weeks or months. They don't say anything. Why? Because they know they're not supposed to talk in order to protect their own Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. Meanwhile, their job is to coerce us to give up those rights on our own so that they can throw us in jail.
I would say that since they are acting as a militant, they don't actually have a right to the Fifth Amendment, because it is specifically stated in there that if you are a militant, then you do not have this right. The other disqualification is public danger. And then the third one would be a civil case the Fifth Amendment would not apply to.
Right. It's just mind-blowing. I mean, that people don't understand that, I mean, this government that they think they have, we really don't have anymore.
Correct. And that's what I'm actually fighting to reinstate. I think we're at a tipping point now with everything going on, that with the right push, we can push it over the edge.
So what's your strategy right now?
Well, I have several. I've got the violations out of nine of the first 10 civil rights, plus the 14th Amendment. And then I have 18 out of the first 29 on the state Bill of Rights, all of which I feel have been violated. So when we go in to get the evidence thrown out the pretrial part of it, then I'm going to present how it is unconstitutional to use that evidence against me. And a lot of it comes down to the Fourth Amendment, the requirement of the warrant, and the Fifth Amendment, the right not to be compelled to bear witness to yourself. Because as you were saying, they keep badgering you to get information from you. So in essence, that simple question is compelling you to respond.
Right.
And with the Miranda rights, if you actually go back and look it up on Wikipedia or in the on the thing about the courts, it actually says that they have to tell you that you have the right to remain silent and give you Miranda rights prior to any questioning. So as they pull you over, that is the first thing that they're supposed to read to you. Not the last thing, because they're detaining you at that point. Once they turn on their lights, they're actually, you can also view that as a terroristic threat, because if you choose not to stop, what's going to happen? Well, if you choose to exercise your right to liberty and to continue your movement on where you were going, what happens? Are they going to slam into your car, causing you bodily damage? Are they even going to shoot you because you decided you got out of the car and wanted to keep going? So that's even a threat on your life. Those can be seen as terroristic threats. We currently have a war against terror, so those could be considered acts of war against the people. And to me, acts of war against the people for a nonviolent crime is definitely cruel and unusual punishment.
Right. No, I completely agree on all those points. What's interesting is I have a friend who, where was he driving from? He wanted to drive from like Rhode Island to New York or something like that when this Corona thing first started. And they had troopers out there who were stopping people at random just for going down this road. Cause they were like, oh yeah, where are you going? Where are you going? Do you have the coronavirus? You know, all kinds of, what state are you coming from? We have a ban on people from one state going to the next state, you know, this kind of stuff. And, and when they were stopped, the guy asked the cop, he said, well, I don't have to stop for you because I haven't done anything wrong. And the cop basically said, well, yeah, that's true. This is a voluntary stop. But he stopped him by getting behind him and turning the lights on. So later he called the police department and he said, yeah, your police officer stopped me and he had no cause to stop me. And they explained this, whoever the operator was at the police station explained, oh, but it was a voluntary stop. So what you're saying, and he asks this, so what you're saying is I can continue to drive even though there's a police officer behind me with flashing lights. And is he going to try to run me off the road? Is he going to try to shoot at me? What's he going to do? Oh, no. He's not going to do any of that because it's a voluntary stop. Well, how do you know the difference between a voluntary stop and an involuntary stop if they all look the same? And I thought this was really interesting because at the same time, aren't they really just admitting that all stops are voluntary?
They definitely are. They're also admitting that they really don't have the power to stop anyone.
Yeah. It's absolutely insane. And again, like to the level of trickery that they have, they could literally argue, well, you know, so let's say they come behind you, they turn their lights on and you pull over. And you say, I didn't have to pull over for you. And they say, well, why did you pull over? They can make the assumption that you've got that contract with the state, because if you didn't have the contract, then you should know you shouldn't have to pull over. But that's stupid because people don't, like, we are indoctrinated to believe that we have to pull over whether we have a license or not, whether we're obligated to or not. That's the scam, that's the fraud. And I think, I mean, that's the threats of violence, the coercion and all this other stuff that we're talking about. That's what it is.
They
don't have that right. So it's interesting to see that what's going to happen. So when's your next court date coming up?
The pretrial is December 7th in Rockwall, Texas. The county court, 382nd. From what I understand, we're third or fourth on the docket. Some of the people ahead of me may take plea deals, so it may move up.
And so this is like, because For the most part, I've been through a couple criminal courts, but for the most part, I've spent a lot of time in traffic courts, and those are a total scam. But we're talking about, but of course, we're not talking about just a traffic citation. We're talking about a cannabis charge now.
Correct. I have 4 felony cannabis charges that I received from the stop. Correct.
Wow. Wait, remind me again, what's a felony about this?
Anything over 4 ounces of flour in Texas is considered a felony, and any possession of oil is considered a felony.
4 ounces.
2 of the charges are actually exactly the same.
Yeah, it's, and I know what they're going to do with that. They're going to say, oh, well, it's not double jeopardy because you can only get convicted of one, and it's in case one falls through. That's what they do. That's what a lot of these fucking laws are.
To me, the true jeopardy or the legal decision would be the act of controlled substance, not the cause of possession, delivery, or any of those. It would actually be, should only be charged with controlled substance act. The cause can change, just like I mentioned with murder. If somebody receives a murder charge and they're shot compared to if they're stabbed, is that going to make any difference? Or if you shoot one guy and then stab him, are you going to get two murder charges for killing the same person because you used two different weapons?
Right. Well, okay, so
to me, just the four charges out of the same act is double jeopardy in itself.
Right. So now you're going to try to fight this, though, by trying to suppress evidence and not by arguing, or is that just the first offense? Because, I mean, ultimately, if you can get the evidence thrown out, that's good for you. But if you can take this, this is just for people to understand, this is how stupid the system is. Because I get this question from people all the time. Well, if you don't have to pay taxes, why isn't there a court case saying that if you don't need a driver's license, why isn't there a court case? This is what's going to need to happen. You've got your constitutional argument. You're fighting for your life here, literally. So
Correct. It
is best for you to take every opportunity and every strategy, because this is your life on the line. So the first one is to try to throw out the evidence. You cannot get to the constitutional drug law is unenforceable unless you lose that part. Now, you could be, I don't want to say an idiot, but you could be an idiot and say, oh, yeah, we can get the evidence thrown out, but we're not even going to try because we want to make a point out of this. But that would be stupid because you're fighting for your life. So any opportunity you have, nobody should judge you for taking that opportunity. But let's say you don't get the evidence thrown out, and now you have your constitutional argument. Even if you win, so what? This doesn't affect anybody else in the country. It doesn't affect the case. It doesn't affect the defendant right behind you on the docket. It doesn't. It's just, this is the lowest level court. You won. The judge ruled in your favor. That's it. He can rule the exact opposite on the exact same case that somebody else has right after it. Unless you lose and you appeal it. Now you have a court of appeals and then win the appeal. Now you have a court of appeals saying, yeah, that judge was wrong, and you can have them enforce that. So now other people getting these charges can come out and say, yeah, this should be enforced the same. This is the problem. You need to lose and lose and lose and lose until you get to a high court. If a low court...
I disagree with that. The way that this current system is set up that way. However, Section 2, or Article 1, Section 2, the inherent political power, all political power is inherent in the people. So the people should have the ability to rule whether it is constitutional or not in court. By taking this power away, you are simply violating the second Section 2 of the Bill of Rights. And that in itself could also be considered as treason because, again, you're trying to overthrow the government as it is written in the Constitution. So I actually completely disagree with the way that it is currently set up, that you have to lose the original court so that your constitutional defense can then be looked at by the state. By doing that, they're taking that political power away from the people. And as I stated, that is a direct violation of Section 2.
Section 2 of?
Article 1, Bill of Rights, Section 2. Pull it up here. All political power is inherent in the people. Mm-hmm. And all free governments are founded on their authority. So the people must give the government the authority to enforce the laws. They cannot do it on their own. and instituted for their benefit. So the law has to be done for the benefit of the people, not the benefit of the government. Mm-hmm. The faith of the people of Texas stands pledged to the preservation of a Republican form of government and subject to this limitation only. They have at all times the inalienable right to alter, reform, or abolish their government in such manner which they may think expedient. So what that says is truly in the state of Texas, the government has no political power even to bring charges against you. It has to be done by the people filing a complaint.
Well, and this is an issue that I have with all constitutions, and we're talking about the Texas Constitution now, but we see this phrase a lot, right? We have the right and the power to alter or abolish the government. But what's the process for that?
Well, when we go to court, if the jury finds that the law is in violation of the Constitution, they would have the right to abolish the law or alter it.
But in we're talking about in a criminal court, one jury does not have the right to overturn a law. They have the right to overturn it for that case or even to nullify, but they cannot remove that law from the codified law, or they cannot overturn the law and have it removed from Congress just by ruling it unconstitutional. That has to either be done in a higher court, which is ultimately done by the judges, but it's not like you can get a group of 100 people to just stand outside of the court and say, hey, we deem this unconstitutional and therefore it doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately.
Well, if you go by the Second Amendment, you would be taking that power away from them, that political power away from the people and giving it to the government for that. But it does state that they have that ability to do that. Because if I present a defense that is based upon the Constitution, federal and state, my defense can be used by other people. They may not be use it like they do with the case law of today, where the case was decided that John Doe could do or whatever, as long as he did these other things first. You could use like fishing. You can go fishing as long as you purchase a license.
Right, but I think you also have the same problem where, you know, even though your argument is right, it can still fail. You either have judges who are incompetent and don't understand the law because they went to law school and they believe everything the way that, you know, the way that the tyrants teach it to us, or because they're just part of it and they say, no, we don't want to give up that power and nobody's going to help you. Nobody's going to, you know, if I throw you in prison, nobody's going to care. No one's going to go crying for you. So for somebody else to come along, and especially knowing that they don't have, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to hire a good lawyer who's not even going to use one of these defenses because he also went to law school, and that most people don't have the mental capacity to understand this much of the law or even know where to look to find everything, or might not even have the time to do it because they're, you know, they're working their ass off just to stay alive. To expect them to have the ability to go through and fight this is really taking it off the table. But even if they're able to get through all of that, you still have the possibility that a judge is going to say, yeah, I've heard this argument before, but it doesn't matter. I'm still finding you guilty. We're not accepting that.
So then that would be the judge committing an act of treason and taking that political power away from the people to overthrow the people's decision.
I'm not saying to overturn their decision, because you're right. If the jury says he's not guilty, then he's not guilty. But a lot of these arguments, especially when it comes to evidence, these are all going to be done during pretrial, which is not going to be in front of the jury. So they're not even going to have that opportunity. Now, I guess, of course, you could make your constitutional arguments in front of the jury, and they might be able to do that. But that also means that the next person who makes the same arguments in front of a completely different jury, this is now an uninformed jury who turns to the government to tell them what is legal and what is not, and who thinks, oh, this guy's just he's saying a bunch of nonsense. I don't understand what he's saying. I'm going to turn to the judge and see what he thinks because he works for the government. I'm going to turn to the police because this is their job. Obviously, they know what they're doing. I'm going to turn to TV and media. So many people are in prison for possession of drugs. Of course it's illegal. What is this guy thinking? And so you're depending on people who are in that mindset, and it's a different 12 people every time.
Well, that's why you have to find the impartial jury, the ones that don't have that mindset.
Yeah, it's easier said than done.
Yeah, that is definitely
not only impartial, but intelligent. I was about to say unbiased. Yeah, of course, that's redundant. But yeah, absolutely. And especially, I mean, if you're not, I mean, look, you have experienced lawyers fighting with district attorneys on how to get the right jury in there. And they know so many tricks to get people to get jurors in there who are just going to screw you over no matter how well you know the law. And they go up against experienced attorneys who are not even going to take your constitutional defenses. So it's, I mean, like, I agree with you. That would be the perfect system, but we're kind of outgunned. I mean, if this is war and that's the weapon that they're using against us, we are outnumbered and outgunned, and that's really a scary thought.
So I agree. That is why I did hire a very good attorney who fully supports the cause. He's from overseas where everything is legal, so he doesn't see anything wrong with legalizing everything.
Nice. So
yes, he's not cheap. I have to agree. I'm still paying for him, but it is definitely the best option that I had.
Man.
And also, in this particular case, the discoverable evidence, like the police report and the videos, I'm not actually allowed to have a copy of. Only my attorney is, and if I want to view them, I have to go to his office to view them. To me, that's a direct violation of being given a copy of the nature of the and cause of the accusation. So that in itself, I'm going to bring up in court as well.
Yeah, that's. I've been to court where they try to play this game where, first of all, they don't want you to represent yourself. They want you to have one of their lawyers because, of course, their lawyers are bound by the bar. And they're not allowed to make these rogue arguments or do anything, you know, what they consider abnormal.
Correct.
They,
that's
they
why
really I want you to give up your rights. This is the thing, right? The Constitution says you have the right to enjoy legal counsel. Counsel. It does not say a legal representative in court. It says counsel. What does it mean to counsel somebody?
Well, exactly. To me, counsel could be anyone. It doesn't have to be an attorney. It could be your best friend who knows information about the subject. It could be one of your buddies. And I agree.
He's my friend. He's fought off all his criminal charges of the exact same nature. I want him to help me on my case. Oh, well, he's not a member of the bar. He's not allowed in this court. He's not allowed to represent you, which I'm not asking him to represent me. I'm asking him to sit next to me and whisper in my ear what I'm supposed to say to you because I know that you're not on my side. And he's the only person in here who cares about me. And I know your lawyers are not on my side. They're just here to make a quick buck.
Well, I have a question. As the attorneys are answering the questions on the bar exam, are they providing self-incriminating evidence to be used against them, whether or not they pass the test?
Sure.
So if they are, in essence, that information cannot be used because that would be self-incriminating evidence in order to be a part of the counsel.
True. I would, more importantly, I would argue that whole process of taking the bar exam, the psychological aspect of that is even worse. And what that is, you know, because you said that you took a class on paralegalism, whatever you want to call it.
Well, yeah, I was going to school for a paralegal, and I did a legal writing and research class.
And you were talking about how to look at a law and determine whether or not it's unconstitutional. When you take the bar exam, you're not taught that. You're not expected to know that. You're expected to know the law as it is and how it has already been determined by the courts. If there's a law there that says, for example, it is illegal for a person to be in possession of cannabis, somebody taking the bar has to say, yes, that is illegal. Because if they don't, they fail. They pass the they fail the test.
Correct. But that is part of the brainwashing.
I might be the best lawyer in the world and say, no, that is absolutely unconstitutional, and I'm going to take this to the Supreme Court, and I'm going to win. Oh, but you can't get your bar license because you won't agree with the propaganda. So well, you'll never get there.
Yeah, that's actually why me and my attorney are working together on this, so that we can both present different information. I can present these questions that he can't. And he can present information legally that I supposedly can't. So as a team, we can hit it from both sides. He doesn't have to worry about losing his bar license because he's not the one asking these questions.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great strategy right there. And people don't understand this. They control what you say. If you are a member of the bar, there are things you cannot say. There are arguments you cannot make. There are positions you cannot take. They are giving you your constitutional right to legal counsel in the form of somebody who's going to tell you that you can't speak and they have to do all the talking, while at the same time they have their hands tied behind their back.
Correct.
That's what they're doing. It's absolutely insane.
Correct. They're trying to take all of your avenues for defense away from you to make you more susceptible to giving in to what they want.
Free country. We're living in a free country. Just keep telling yourself that. All right, Robert. This
America
is
free again.
Yeah. This has been an awesome conversation. I want to hear more about this. I want to follow up on the case and see where this goes and how it turns out. If anybody wants to follow you or support you, where can we go to find out more about what's going on with this case and stay up to date?
I've got a QR code, which is a link to my petition as well as to the court information. Trying to see how to pull up a picture on here.
Just do this. Send me the link, because we're wrapping this up anyway. Send me the link, and I'll post it right on the bottom of the video. So anybody, if you're watching this now, look for that link. Unless you're watching this live, then it's not there yet. But it'll be there in 5 minutes, I promise. Go look for this link, and this will go to your petition?
Correct. It goes to, it takes you to the QR code, and at the bottom of the QR code, it gives you a link to the petition.
Okay.
The QR code gives you information about the court, where it's located, and what day it's on. And it actually has a Google Map link, so you can click on it, and it'll take you straight there.
Awesome. All right. Well, it's been awesome to have you on. I'm really sorry to hear what you're going through. It really is. I mean, it pisses me off. I'm mad at the government every single day, but this is what we're fighting against because, the government is... it's a criminal force. It's Darth Vader's army. They're literally running around the country, oppressing us, stealing from us everything they can: money, property, our time. The worst thing they could take from us is our time. We're gonna stick you in prison because we found an excuse. It's total bullshit. We're gonna turn you into slave labor. This whole system is a scam. It's unconstitutional. It's unfreedom-like. It's un-American. And this is what they're forcing on us. So everybody, I encourage you to go check out that link. Follow up on Robert's case. And of course, make sure you follow this show, because this is, if you have a story like this, reach out to me also, because this is what got me involved. I went through some really bullshit criminal cases that they threw at me, and just so you know, Robert's not full of shit, because I know, like, a lot of people hearing this, it's difficult to hear and understand. I went through a lot of this myself with some criminal charges. I was able to win, and I did it using arguments that, I mean, the whole time the courts were telling me, you know, oh, here's your public defender, and the public defender was like, yeah, you gotta go plead guilty. That's your only way out of this. You know, take a plea deal, and no, I get all my cases dismissed because I stand my ground and say this is unconstitutional. These are my rights, and you don't have the right to do this. This is a free fucking country. You can't do this. So just keep listening to the show. Make sure you subscribe and follow up on this. And if you do have a case like this, definitely reach out. I wish we could provide legal support for everybody, but we can't because these things really are just complicated. And I know lawyers are expensive and everything else, but the more informed you can get, the more angry you can get, and the closer we can actually get to overturning this shitty system that we have. You know, and putting things back to normal and turning this into making America free again. It really is a shame where we've ended up. But Robert, again, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And guys, we will catch you next time on Taxation is Theft. And don't forget also to head over to the website and sign up for the free Opener 3000. You're going to need it when they come to take it. You're going to need one of those. All right, guys, I'll see you next time. Robert, I'll see you around.
Thank you, Dan.